Couple more minutes. I just want to press the right button in case I forget. Sometimes I get so wrapped up in the stuff. I'm all set up to press the button and then I forget. No matter how many times Margot reminds me, don't forget to record. Okay, I think we've got most everybody here. So if we can take a moment to get a sense of our connection with one another. Not just those of us who are here in person and online, but all beings who are doing work like this at this particular time, in this moment. But there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of little groups like this all over the world that are dedicated to a new creation. Dedicated to their own personal growth and healing. And knowing that my own personal growth and healing contributes to the growth and the healing of the world. If there happens to be anybody new here this morning, welcome. And everybody is welcome. We are using a book by Paul Selig called The Book of Innocence. You don't need to have a book if you've got one, it probably helps. But you don't have one, we read passages out loud and comment on them. If you have questions or comments to make, please feel free to just chime in and we'll make sure you are heard. If you happen to be new to this,
speak up.
sure. If you happen to be new to this work, the only thing we ask is that if you have some questions that are sort of remedial in nature, that you contact me directly and we do that by email or by telephone. So if you need to get in touch with me, email and all is jerryboy@twc.com. So for all of you who are here, welcome. I'm going to begin on page 5, down towards the bottom. Before I get to that, let me introduce another idea or an idea that it's connected with is the world as we know it, or the world as I know it, is a mess. There must be something that I can do differently to unmystify it. make it less of a mess. Part of that is to realize that I have contributed to the mess. Don't like to say that out loud. Don't like to even hint that out loud, but it's true. There's a basic metaphysical principle that says, if I see it out there, it's happening in here. And that's true for anger, fear, violence, as well as joy and peace and love and harmony. But if I see it out there, it's happening. It happens first in here. The way the book puts it, down at the bottom of page five, all of the creations you have made that are operating as limited are chosen by you through fear. And indeed, this would include war, include poverty, include famine, are creations born in the denial of the divine, and they are your creations. We don't like to say that or think that out loud, but the creation of the world and negativity and limitation is a denial of divine presence. I would never say that out loud. I would never even think that out loud. But well, I mean, what else can it be? If this is my creation, and it's possible that there could be another form of creation, a new creation, which recognizes divine love, unconditional love, peace, joy, harmony, then there must be something on the other side of things that's creating this other side of stuff. And it's creation born of the denial of the divine, and they are your creations, my creations. And we're saying that not as a judgment, not as something bad, not as something you need to beat yourself up for. We're saying, excuse me. If I have created this, then I can create something different. That's the whole key to what this. I think any kind of spiritual work we're doing. If I realize and accept responsibility for creating the world as I see it right now, I am capable of creating something new and creating something different. That just happens to be true. If I created this, I can create something else. But see, what happens to me is, I say, oh my God, I look at the world and I say, what, how could I possibly uncreate this and create something new? How could I possibly do that? How could I possibly allow that to happen? And that's what we are working through. We are opening ourselves up to the possibility that I can create a new and a better world. I open myself up to the possibility of creating a new and a better world in alignment with the principles of divine love and divine consciousness. That is what I am able to do, and I'm able to do that by reinforcing the idea in the sense that I am capable and that this is a possibility for me and for us, let's say. How is that so? Paul asks. When you decide where God is not, you embellish that idea, you concretize that idea, and you abandon God to that idea. You have made that idea made manifest, a totem or an idol, a thing that you place before God. God cannot be in that dark place. God cannot be in that dark person. God cannot be in that dark behavior. In your limitation of God, you have empowered that dark place, and your choice to deny God, an act of will, is in agreement to itself and is outpictured in consciousness and manifest in the world that we see. If you don't understand what we mean, you must understand that you have will, choice. You may choose to see God, you may choose to limit God, or choose to deny God, and that will become your experience. What you choose creates your experience. What you don't understand yet is how you contribute to the manifest world through those things. When one denies the divine in herself, she has immediately denied the divine in all things. If God cannot be where you are, it could not be anywhere. When I deny God or unconditional love in a certain person, place, thing, situation, I deny it in all situations. Doesn't seem that way. I don't like to say that. I don't like to even think about that, but it's true. There's a line from a song I wrote years ago. You can't hold your brother in the dark and expect to see the light. One person, one thing put in the darkness, or it's not possible for that to be loved unconditionally, puts everyone and everything in it. That's the way it works. Unconditional love is either unconditional love or it's nothing at all. Either it's for and with everyone and everything, and if it's not for and with everything, it's not unconditional love anymore. It doesn't work. I find that tremendously challenging. Yeah, Linda.
Well, I had an experience about 3 weeks ago that just paralleled that exactly. And I wasn't going to bring it up, but it tells me I think I need
Okay.
to. I was out on my evening walk in my community, and I go out of my community and down the road and over the village, and they start. So I was coming out of my community, I ran into a neighbor who's been a neighbor a long time. Our community is not real big, but she lives on the other side of the circle. And so she had already, I guess, gone walking. She was walking her dog, coming back, and I was going out. So we crossed each other on the sidewalk, and I said hello. We never really had a conversation as such, but I've spoken to her many times, several years, but she got walking dog. So I said something. I said, "Oh, what a beautiful dog." I said, "Can you tell her you?" She said, "Yes, this is, I mean, it really was a beautiful dog." She said, "I was petting him," and so she said, "Oh, I didn't know if you like dogs." And I said, "I like everybody else's dog. I don't have one. I love on yours and go home." And just general conversation, and one thing led to another, and we really didn't get into politics because that was not my intent, and I don't think it was really hers, but she knew from some of my general comments, and I knew her from some of hers, and hers kind of went a little bit more than general. So my small self kicked in while I'm standing there, and I'm going, "Oh, honey, you really drank the Kool-Aid." And so anyway, and I said, "Well, you know, we're probably the other end of spectrum." And all the time I'm going, "Oh, Fox News, you know, she's just redeeming." But anyway, so we didn't get any time. I mean, we were very cordial with one another. So she went on back, she was walking towards her home, and I went on about the start of my walk. So as I'm walking down the sidewalk, I can feel this tension building up. I said, "No, we're going to handle this a different way, or I'm going to try." So I thought, okay, and that damn bus come back in my mind. You know, we all have to be on the bus. And I thought, how in the world can I be on this bus with her? And so continually walking, I thought, okay, and this is how I look at it, whether it's right or wrong. I thought, now I cannot control, nor should I try how she thinks and acts. There's only one person that I can be responsible for. And that's me. I can realize and accept her as being a child of God, divine being. She has her issues or her life path and lessons to learn, and I have mine. And if that means we're on different sides of the political spectrum, so be it. But I'm not going to take on the responsibility for her to get on the bus that she has to think like me, because I'm not going to make her think like me. So I walked it out. I thought it all out. As I walked, I'm like, I'm home. I felt at peace with it because I couldn't do any more than that. I thought I can accept her.
Can I add one thing?
Sure.
She gave you a gift.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe she made me think about that under that.
Gave you a gift. And how often do we have people who give us gifts and not realize it and not be thankful.
Thank you.
I remember along those lines, self-esteem prophecy that I read years and years ago. One thing that they said, everyone you meet has a message for you if you're open.
And I helped to create that. I put them in my life before I was even born. Now, one of the key elements here is that there's a difference between my perception that comes from my ego and my personality, and my perception or my realization that comes from my higher consciousness. That's always operating. And what we are being asked to do is, you can't deny your perception of your lower self. You can say, oh, that's wrong, that's bad, that shouldn't be here. It's going to be there anyway. It's going to be in the form of judgment or blame or shame or guilt or some other form of lower consciousness. However, at the same time, I am realizing that is not the truth. It's not my truth. It's not your truth either. It's kind of the lens through which I'm seeing you is the lens of my lower consciousness. And as soon as I do that, of course, that's coming from my lower consciousness as well. And again, not a bad thing, just a thing in limit. The way the book puts it is a thing in limitation. And if you want to be out of limitation, then you need to be aligned with divine consciousness. So divine consciousness says exactly what you were saying, Linda. This is part of her trip. It's not mine. I'm glad it's not mine. But this is part of her journey, part of her chosen journey. And I have no business messing it up or pretending that it's wrong or bad or something's the matter with it. I don't like it on a personal level, but I can, or at least I am willing to see this other human being as being a child of God and working through her karma just as I am working through mine. So again, I would encourage us to continue to make that distinction, because I get lost in this a lot. All I have to do is flip on the news and I'm in lower consciousness. Now I can deny that or pretend it's not there. That doesn't help either. I wonder what it would be like, you know, you're talking about getting on the bus. We're all on the same bus. That was a fire sign theater, but we're all bozos on this bus. Remember that one from the 70s?
I got all five or six albums.
That was a long time ago.
A lot of wisdom.
How can I, the way the Course in Miracles puts it is, how can I see this differently? How can I see this person differently? How can I see this situation differently? If I choose to, it is a choice. I am choosing to see you in lower consciousness, or I am choosing to see you in higher consciousness. When I choose to see you in higher consciousness, that does not mean that lower consciousness disappears. It's still there. I still know that in my lower consciousness, I am working or I'm developing or creating out of fear or limitation. It's still there. But I choose not to make that my truth. I choose to look at you or look at myself through the eyes of higher consciousness, which is the truth of who you really are. Now, I don't know about you, but it's going to take my emotions a little bit of time to catch up with that. So I'm still in the place sometimes, even when I'm in higher consciousness, that I'm working on my emotions and my feelings, because I still can't stand where you're at. I still know you're wrong. Okay? Russell.
Is that like practicing the art of knowing that you're in the world but not of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you look at her situation, you analyze it, understand it, and just let it go, and, you know, concentrate on the higher consciousness.
And recognize that I have a choice.
It's practice. You do that every day. It's, you know.
And you practice it more than once. It's not a never one shot deal, no matter who we're dealing with. Again and again. It's like forgiving yourself again and again and again and again. John?
Yeah, I call it jet lag. It takes so long for me to turn the switch on. Months, years sometimes. Forget that I have it. Wake up on me, remember me, and forget it.
That's a perfect example, John. You didn't hear it was John says it's kind of like jet lag, right? I already know that I'm an hour behind or 2 hours behind or 3 hours behind, right? I know that in my mind, and I can accept that as a reality, right? But it's going to take my body maybe a couple of days to catch up with it. In this case, I can know that you are a divine child of God, even though you're doing something that I feel is hateful and horrible and awful and wrong and bad. So it's going to take a while for my emotions to catch up with the reality of alignment with divine consciousness. Just know that that's true. Nothing wrong with you. Now, there will come a time, I believe, when my emotions or what I feel will not get hooked into this process. In other words, will be rather irrelevant. How you feel has nothing to do with who you are. How you feel has nothing to do with who the other person is. I believe there will come a time when that's not only a possibility, but when that's a truth. I'm not there yet. I don't perceive myself as being there yet. But I do know, and I guess this is what the book is emphasizing more than anything else, I do know there is a choice. I might not be able to choose my feelings at the moment, but I can choose my thoughts and I can choose my perception and allow my feelings that are in jet lag, all right, to catch up with me eventually. So that's one of the traps I fall into sometimes. I think sometimes that I should be able to choose my feelings. Well, I guess you can and you can't. But it'd be like waking up some morning and saying, I think I'll be depressed today. And that's pretty ridiculous. I don't think anybody would do that, right? But the same is true as I say, I wake up in the morning and say, I think I'm going to look at everyone and everything as being a divine child to God, being part of divine creation. That's a nice thought. But 2 minutes after I have that thought, guess what's going to happen? And again, I'm not making a judgment out of that. I'm saying that this is that awareness that we talked about many times before, that I'm going to find myself in the process of being awake, being awake, being aware, being in alignment with divine consciousness, and being asleep, being unaware. And
Jerry.
my job is, right now, my job is, it might change after a while, but right now, my job is to be grateful for coming back into divine consciousness and not beat myself up for falling asleep.
Jerry.
Yeah, John.
So what I'm hearing is that we need to, or we should try to align to divine consciousness, whatever that means. I'm thinking about some of the studies that have been done where a bunch of people, sometimes hundreds of people, have all been exposed to the same experience, but then following that, they all perceived it differently. And so if you ask them, well, what happened? They will say, well, this happened, that happened. They were wearing red. No, they were wearing green. They did this, they looked like that. They can't recognize. The witnesses can't really recognize the persons that they saw in this scenario. I'm thinking about Pontius Pilate saying, what is truth? And I'm thinking about this whole idea of choosing to be in higher consciousness to kind of direct what we perceive as truth or what's happening. So, anyway, just some thoughts.
Thanks, John. I'm reminded of that, I think it's a Hindu parable of the five blind men and the elephant. And they were all asked to describe this animal that was in front of them. Well, one of the blind men leaned against the side of the elephant and said, "This is a beast that is made or built or created like a wall." Another one was at one of the feet and said, "This animal is like a tree with roots in the ground." Another one was by the tail, said, "This animal is like a rope." Another one was by the trunk, "This animal is like a snake." And they were all describing things as being their truth, without realizing how limited they were in their examination of things. And that's true for us as well. I think this is what this is. But it's never what it appears to be. Lord, that I may see is my prayer, that I may see the way you see. May I see myself the way you see me. May I see others the way you see them. Yeah, Matt?
Jerry, I spend a lot of time thinking about what is before me that I can actually impact. And how much of my time am I wasting on things that I don't have that ability? And by wasting my time on that, I'm missing out on things that I really can make impact on. And I think back to, and I may have shared this before, when I had the opportunity to be involved with food pantry. And when I first went in there, what I saw was poverty and lack and hunger and judgment, lots of judgment. Coming from myself and coming from the few volunteers that were there, lots of patting ourselves on the back and, oh, what a good people we are. Boy, aren't we glad that we're not in your shoes. And there's a line for you who need help, and here's a line for us who are kind enough to give you some help. And then there was one instance where I was able to see something different. And then that gave me the opportunity to start looking for and recognize what joy there is in everybody. And once I started looking for the joy, once I started looking for the things that, and being curious about it, you know, what's going on in your life? It became infectious for myself and for the other volunteers that were there. And we went from a really seemed like a dark place where people didn't want to come to the food pantry. People didn't, you know, they needed to do it, so they were there, to people loved coming to the food pantry. We went from 4 volunteers to over 100 volunteers in less than a year, all because of the shift in attitude in what it was that we were looking and seeing. Wow. Instead of, and many of those volunteers were the people who were receiving food as well. And again, it was just that shift of what did you see? It was what you were looking for.
That's a great example, Matt. Thank you. I'm also reminded of a little short parable that Jesus spoke of one time when he said there was a scribe, Pharisee, and a tax collector, publican. And the Pharisee went into the temple synagogue, stood in front of the altar and said, "I thank you, God, that I am not like the rest of men. I pay my tithes, I obey the commandments, I do all the things I'm supposed to be doing. And especially I'm grateful that I'm not like that publican back there." Poor publican, the tax collector, was in the back of the synagogue. And then the scene shifts to the publican. And the publican says, "Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." And then Jesus looked at the crowd and said, who is more justified in his prayer? And of course, everybody got a little bit wiggly because they didn't want to say, well, the publican had a better prayer than the Pharisee did. So he just stopped it there. But in that silence, after that call to judgment, I could hear myself saying, and probably some other people said, thank God I'm not like that Pharisee up there. And how quickly the focus got shifted. And as Matt was saying in his example, how dropping judgment and openness to people, other people's needs, including their own, right, allowed that whole set of works to expand in consciousness. It was a space opened up, whereas before it was so tightly held on to in terms of judgment, in terms of, as you said, sort of patting ourselves on the back. There wasn't any room for anybody else. What you guys did, maybe somewhat inadvertently in the beginning, was to kind of open the doors, open the windows. So let's let some fresh air in here. Let's get a little bit of a different viewpoint. And by doing that just a little bit at a time, I mean, one more, what, 4 volunteers to over 100? That's absolutely amazing. And it's, you recognize too, and other people did, maybe consciously, maybe not, there was a choice we made here of how we're going to be running this show, about what we're going to be doing, about what we're going to be contributing.
Jerry?
That's great. Love that story.
Yes. Jerry, so I've been watching a show called AD on Amazon Prime. It's about the Acts of the Apostles. And so in this show, the after Jesus dies, the Christians were terrified, frequently terrified. They had to choose beyond their fear to love. They had to choose beyond their fear to act from their conviction. The show does take liberties with the story that's in the Bible, but last night was powerful. I'm watching. I mean, it's been. I think the whole series is there, but I'm working my way through it. They showed Paul, who was the Paul that they have, the Saul that they have, is terrifying. He is just, he's vicious. And then he goes through that experience where he's blinded. And he just, it's like he goes from one extreme to the other. He's just so, now his mind is changed so much. And sometimes I wish we could go through some of those so, to make it easier for us to have faith. But it just, so if you haven't seen the show, you may want to take a look at it. It's pretty fascinating. Thanks.
What was the name of it again, John?
A.D., like
A.D.
Anno Domini.
Okay. Anno Domini means the year of our Lord.
Yeah.
That calendar change. Thanks, John. I appreciate that. I might try it out. When one denies the divine in herself, she has immediately denied the divine in all things. If God cannot be where you are, it cannot be anywhere. Where am I not letting God into my life? Where am I allowing fear to dominate? And that's especially true for me as my body ages, my body gets older and doesn't cooperate the way it used to. And I can get mad at it and try to whip it into shape. Right? You can say, well, this is a natural outcome of aging. But at the same time, I don't want to be passive about that. I want to say that I have a choice about how I look at this thing called my body. Now, you are not summoning God, making God be where you want it. God is actually already there, but is being denied by you, and that becomes the manifest experience. When one says, I have a right to know, I have a right to be, I have a right to know myself as worthy, perhaps the door will open. But then you use will to step through. I am in the upper room, again, claim truth. It is the aspect of the divine as you. Say that again. The divine as you. The divine as you. That resides in the upper room and will claim fully each aspect of self there that is in agreement to it. The divine as me is in the upper room, but I can also bring along my physical body, my personality, my ego consciousness, saying, that's part of my vehicle here on planet Earth too. That exists on a higher plane as well as on a lower plane. In a lower plane, I let it define my life. In a higher plane, it becomes the vehicle, the chosen vehicle that I have here on planet Earth. It becomes the, one of the words we've used before. It becomes the unique lens through which the divine light shines through. Never happen again, has never happened before, and will never happen again. That my personality, my ego consciousness, and even my physical body create the unique lens through which the divine light shines through, which will never happen again. When we teach through Paul, we monitor his system so that the dictation may ensue perfectly. When we teach today, we have an intention to lift the room, to lift the teaching, to lift the comprehension of the teaching beyond a kind of bias that most of you hold to what should be. Your expectations and desires about how God should manifest to appease the small self desires for a God that gives it what it wants. God is present as all things. The teaching of the upper room, the teaching of reception, is of course a teaching of manifestation, but manifestation through being, not getting through adjustment and reception, not stamping one's feet and shaking one's fist at the sky. I demand what I get, be as I say. As we talked about many times before, there are essentially two kinds of manifestation. One is the one we learned with The Secret when we watched Oprah. Right? We found out that and Deepak Chopra and all the other cohorts that came and say, this is how we create things through manifestation. We create something that wasn't there before. It's perfectly fine. And Ram Dass put it one time, he said, he said, you might spend years trying to manifest a Cadillac. And once it shows up in your life, you realize you don't want it anymore. I really got a kick out of that. So there is that lower form of manifestation, which is, again, perfectly fine. It works in the material world. It's creating something that's not there or wasn't there before. The other kind of manifestation is really more of a discovery of something that's already there and always been there. Discovery of divine truth, unconditional love, peace, joy, happiness, those gifts of the spirit that are always there, that don't get created by you. They're not created as the divine self. They are part of the divine self. They are part of your own consciousness that already exists. That's not creating something out of nothing. It's the realization that's always been there. So for instance, if you are working on loving unconditionally, that's not something you create. It's something that already exists and always has existed. It can't not exist. So what I'm doing is, somebody put it earlier, this, I'm surrendering again. I'm surrendering to the truth of divine consciousness that is already here. I am letting go as best I possibly can in this moment in time. I am letting go of anyone and anything that gets in the way of that truth. It is the aspect of the divine as you that resides in the upper room and will claim fully each aspect of self that is there, that is in agreement to it. In other words, I'm not making my personality or my ego consciousness a definition of who I am, but I am raising it to a level of awareness where I recognize that is my chosen vehicle. That is part of that lens, that unique lens through which the divine light shines through. When we teach through Paul, we monitor his system so that the dictation may ensue perfectly. When we teach today, we have an intention to lift the room, to lift the teaching, to lift the comprehension of the teaching beyond the kind of bias that most of you hold to what should be. Your expectations and desires of how God should manifest to appease the small self's desires for a God that gives it what it wants. That's my small self-consciousness again. That's my little self getting in the way, trying to define my reality. How do you recognize the difference between working out of your higher consciousness and your lower consciousness?
I like what you say. Open your heart and close.
And I have no idea where that came from. Well, I do. Came from divine consciousness because it was too good and too simple for me to create out of my own mind. Simple formula. When I'm thinking about doing something or holding on to a particular thought, I ask myself, does this open my heart or does it close my heart? That's simple. And we can feel that. We can experience. You can actually feel that in your body after a while. I know what an open heart feels like in my physical body. That's not just what we're talking about, but I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to shut down my heart. To say, no, you can't get on this bus. Or maybe you get on the bus, but you need to be in the back. I'm certainly not going to sit next to you. I know what that feels like. I know what that feels like to shut down my physical body. When I get angry, when I get afraid, I can feel that physically in my being. When my heart is open, sometimes I have to pry it open, depending upon circumstances. But when my heart is open, I can feel that physically as well. And again, that's not something that I created. It's just something that I became aware of, that my body is a great barometer for what opens my heart and what closes my heart.
Yeah, like vibration.
Mm-hmm. It's another way. I guess it's a simpler way of saying vibration. But the same is true. Vibration of an open heart, the vibration of a closed heart. We can imagine that right now. What would it be like to have a little kitten sitting in your lap, purring? And what would it be like to have a rat sitting in your lap? Notice how quickly we can shift, we can change. And would it be interesting to notice that they're both God's creatures? One doesn't happen to be aesthetically as pleasing as the other, but they both contain the divine element of truth. The teaching of the upper room, the teaching of reception, is of course a teaching of manifestation of something that is already there. But manifestation through being, not getting, through alignment and reception, not stamping one's feet and shaking one's fist to the sky. I demand what I get to be, as I say. If any of you got what you truly thought you needed, you might be grateful for it. But how many times have we really thought we needed something and didn't? I thought this thing that I think I need, which is going to fulfill my dreams or make me happy or bring me peacefulness, never did it in the first place. Maybe for 30 seconds or maybe for a little bit less than, oh my God, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then something else comes along. And, oh, really, really? Now what I really need to be happy is this.
Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
Along those lines, that when you get a little older, you've got the task of getting rid of all those things that shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes home when you start cleaning out those closets and the whole why did I need all this?
I've done that a few times in my life. When I went to live on an Indian reservation for a year, I gave away practically everything I owned. I had everything I owned wound up in a little van that took me out there. So I had a pot, frying pan, a couple plates, set of silverware, knife, fork, spoon. Didn't need anything else. And then, of course, what happened when I moved back, I started filling up all the empty spaces again. It's like there was a, years ago, there was a Rubbermaid commercial where the kids and the parents are looking at the attic, and the attic is a mess, stuff all over the place. And they said, we need to get this organized. So they go out and they buy this whole bunch of Rubbermaid containers, get everything all packed away. And now it all fits into a corner in the attic. And one of the kids says, we need more stuff. It was a great example, okay, of, you know, collecting all this stuff, putting it away, and then making room for some more. And we need to fill up this empty space.
All right, I know it's in the basement, but I can't find it. Just come
on. It's in there someplace. Well, let's see. I think we need to meditate. Thank you for all your contributions. An interesting class this morning. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. A couple of breaths. Hopefully the air conditioning police will not come in back in again. I think that's what they were checking on. You can close your eyes if you like. Get comfortable in your spot. At this moment, I have an overwhelming sense of gratitude for you, for me, for us together. There's no need to explain it. There's no need to understand it. All we are being asked to do is to be with it. So as you close your eyes and allow your breath to find its own natural rhythm, notice that within you, not just within your physical body, but within you, within your being, is a sense of joy and of gratitude. No matter what your external circumstances might be, within your being is a known sense of joy and gratitude. And allow yourself to sort of take that in like a sponge. So it begins to touch every cell and fiber of your being. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And imagine that sense of joy and gratitude begins to diffuse itself throughout your day. That's always with you. I am grateful. I am joyful. I am joyful. I am grateful. You are blessed. You are loved. You are a divine child of God. And even though the world might be noisy, it does not have to take away or detract from your sense of joyfulness and peacefulness. As Paul said in the book of Romans, I say to you, nothing, absolutely nothing, can separate you from God's love. Deep breath. Stretch your bed. And you can open your eyes when you're ready. Okay. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you.
Oh, we got to see the chairs today.
Oh, that's right. And if you're right. Thanks for remembering that.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, thanks, everyone. Great meeting.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks.
Appreciate
you're welcome, guys.
It. Hope to see you Thursday.
Sounds good.
Thank you.